bij de derde.
Wie mee? Who's gay?
It's inside me. He's inside me. And he wants to take me again.
What's the matter? Can I get your ghost ball?
Oh, mama, mama, mama.
I feel so scrumptious.
Attention, creepy shoppers. Welcome back to Not Another Queer Horror Podcast. I'm your host, Trevor, otherwise known as Christian Mingle, and we have reached our fifth and final episode of our debut mini-season. This interview was originally meant to be used as a bonus sixth episode, but since I had some trouble once again nailing down my fifth interviewee, I decided to just bump this one up to use as an actual episode. Now, I recorded this as a test episode with my friend Haley, so it is a bit rough around the edges, and you'll notice that the format is not quite the same. You may also notice that the audio quality of this introduction is a bit off. I am recording it from my car as I'm in the process of moving and have not yet set up my recording space. After today's episode, our podcast will go on a bit of a hiatus as we work on season 2. During that time, we ask you to send us your feedback and suggestions, as we really would like to make this podcast something for the listeners. Please also be sure to share it with your friends, to rate it, to review it from wherever you're listening, and also to subscribe if you haven't already. That way you won't miss season 2. For today's episode, we are looking at a really silly movie, and it tackles some pretty interesting ideas that anyone who has worked retail or customer service will likely be able to understand. If you haven't had the chance to see this, it is available on Shudder, so if you want to take a look and then come on back, again, you'll have a bit more context. Otherwise, let's jump right into my interview with Haley Benson.
Okay, God, I have to go get a drink of water. I have dry mouth. I was like nervous, so I got high, and now I'm like even more nervous.
Aw, don't be nervous.
I know. All right, so today we are joined by the lovely Miss Haley Benson. Haley comes from Chicago, but is currently a Philadelphia resident. She is a singer, actress, and dancer. What was it, fourth or fifth down the line? You're a dancer.
Yeah.
She has a little bit of it all, folks. But yeah, so Haley and I know each other. We worked together for a while in a few different jobs, which I'm sure we'll get into today. But before we do, I would like to invite you, Haley, to identify yourself. I'll take the lead on this one. So I am a gender non-conforming, cis, white, pansexual, queer man. My pronouns are he, him, but I will literally take any pronoun. That's fine by me. You, my dear?
What's up? I identify as a cis heterosexual woman. Did I do that right? No, cis yeah. Woman, white woman. That's heterosexual. I don't know.
She's like the plainest you can
the
get.
Boring.
That's, yeah, there you go. This is the test run. So this episode may not ever get aired, but I've invited Haley here because she's a great queer ally. I can attest to that.
Yeah.
So Haley, please tell me and the listeners, what is your connection to horror?
So I do really love horror. I think that I forget how much I enjoy horror films because I don't watch them often. But when I do, I'm like, oh my gosh, no, I love these movies.
Okay, perfect. Right on. So we love that. We love someone that has a bit of a connection. So, well, without dragging our ass any longer, we should just get right into it. So tonight we are discussing the film Slacks from 2020. And for anyone who doesn't know, that is Slacks, S-L-A-X-X. Before we get too far into it, just what's your initial reaction to this film?
I loved it. Oh my God, I loved it. I laughed so many times, and there were also so many times when my mouth was just open for the longest period of time, but I was like, I loved it.
Yeah, it's a wild ride. All right, so let's see, what is this movie about? So Slacks, again, released in 2020. It was written by Patricia Gomez and Elsa Kep Kephart. I hope I'm saying this correctly. Also directed by Elsa Kephart. So written and directed, we love that. So this film, as Haley suggested, is a horror comedy. We open on an experimental cotton field in India that is owned by the Canadian Cotton Clothiers, or CCC. We then cut to a CCC store where Libby, our protagonist, is arriving for her first shift. Libby's arriving for an overnight remerchandising. They are launching the new Super Shaper jeans. This overnight is going to include a visit from both the regional manager, Barb, and the CEO, Harold. They are also going to have a visit later on in the evening from web influencer, Peyton Jewell, and that's a mess in and of itself. We have these new jeans that are coming out, and these jeans are supposed to be like state of the art. They're supposed to use some sort of heat technology to fit your body. So that way, me, who is a very large gal, and Haley, who is more on your average size, could wear the same pair of jeans and they would look fabulous. Very sister to the traveling pants.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
But unfortunately, this one doesn't end so happily. So our movie kind of kicks off when one of the managers, Gemma, steals a pair of the jeans to try them on and be the first one to wear them. She seems to have some sort of body issues, so she's really excited to kind of get her ass in these jeans and see what happens to her. Unfortunately, what happens is that the jeans sever her at the waist and she's cut in half. Following that, another manager, Hunter, she steals the jeans after Gemma. She tries to put them on, but the jeans trip her, causing her to impale her skull on a coat rack. And then the jeans come into the hands of fellow manager Lord, who is planning to put on the jeans, but before he can even do so, they eat him alive, chopping him up into a bunch of tiny little bits.
You know what? I'm going to say that one is clever, though, because it's literally the teeth of the zipper that initially get him. And I was like, I see what you did there.
Ooh, I don't know what it is about fingers and like that. Ooh, that really got me. Although, you know, we saw a girl get cut in half earlier, but the guy getting his thumb chopped off, that was, ooh, that got me. Still thinking about it now, I'm getting the chills. So what happens? So this is all kind of going down behind the scenes while on the floor, the store manager, Craig, is really like busting his ass to get this overnight to go over successfully. Craig is going up for a promotion. So he really wants to impress the CEO and really wants to kind of like use this as a stepping stone to the next place in his career. So he kind of has all of these managers in the background looking for one another, and they're, you know, getting killed by these jeans in the meantime. But while this is going down, our new girl, Libby, our protagonist, she becomes aware of this right away because she finds Gemma's body cut in half in the bathroom, brings it to Craig's attention. But Craig, who is really stressed about this promotion, says, let's just put this to the side. He insists that Gemma must have killed herself and that there's no need to be worried. And he says, we'll address this in the morning, because for whatever reason, this company during their overnights locks the employees in fully and detaches all communication from the outside world. They are really trying to cover this launch of these jeans. And so Craig says, we can't get any help from anyone. You can't even call the cops until, you know, we open up at 8 a.m. So we might as well just keep on going with this overnight. In the midst of all of this, we have this visit from this web influencer who is, I don't know if she's my favorite character, but she's definitely up there because she fully embodies that kind of, you know, web influencer, hey guys, welcome back to my channel persona. So this girl, Peyton Jewels, or Peyton Jewel, I'm not sure if it's one or two jewels. She's a web influencer, seems to be mostly focused on like typical, no offense, Haley, white girl shit. Like, you know, health and well-being and yoga pants and like, look at my haul and look at this cute furry cell phone case. She's all of those.
Literally things. The moment where she was in like the yoga store and she was like, spandex. I was like, I understand. I get that.
Exactly. So she shows up to do her little like debut. So the deal is the store is on lockdown, but they're going to open it up for 1 hour from midnight to 1 a.m. So Peyton Jewel can come on and do a launch of the jeans debut video on her YouTube channel. So she shows up with her crew of two people, a camera person and a microphone operator. And she's obviously giving the personality you would expect, very kind of stuck up, very snotty. She wants to just like do it, get it done, get out of there. And she's very concerned about her following and her fans. While she is waiting on Craig, the store manager, and Barb, we haven't even talked about Barb yet, but we'll get to Barb. Barb is the regional manager who's visiting to help oversee this overnight, and she's just like on Craig's ass the entire time. So Barb and Craig have both run off, one to get Peyton the jeans, one to get Peyton like a a swag bag or some shit. So Peyton's getting frustrated that she has to wait. So she's like, you know what? Let's just start this, because she says, I'm losing my mojo. And I can't lose my mojo. I just thought that was a really funny callback to Austin Powers. And that's the only other time I've ever heard that phrase used. So Peyton starts doing her little, you know, webisode. Here's these new jeans. They're going to make me look so skinny. Da 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 da. And while they're filming this, a pair of the jeans, the legs of the jeans, sneaks up behind her and then strangles her, quickly forming themselves into like a noose and like strangle slash snapping her neck. That's when it becomes apparent to everyone that these jeans are like killing people. And then the jean just goes batshit and takes on everyone, the two crew people, all of the staff that's in there. It goes on a full-on massacre. So Craig is the first to come back to the floor. Oh, by the way, we've kind of lost track of Libby, our protagonist. I forgot. At some point, Craig doesn't want her to, like, because he's really afraid she's going to try and, like, call the cops or do something. So he locks her away. So that's where she's been this whole time. Anywho, Craig, he comes back to the floor and sees the pair of jeans, like, licking up the blood. So he just sneaks away before the jeans...
licking up the blood.
Literally, that's what they're doing, girl.
No, when that first happened in the bathroom, I honestly thought, because they show, I mean, we'll get into this later too, but with all the retail tropes, right? And in the bathroom is all about cleanliness and cleaning up after yourself. So I honestly took that as like the jeans just cleaning up after themselves, because that's what you do in like the retail environment. And I was like, well, at least they're like doing their job.
Yeah, I do want to talk about all of those like retail signs you see. I didn't notice that one, did I? So anyway, Craig, he discovers the jeans have slaughtered everybody. So he runs back to the office to hide. That's where Barb's at. He and Barb hide in the, well, Barb doesn't know he's hiding. They have a little spat. Barb, like I said, has been on his ass all night. He tells her not to go out of the office, but not why. As he's trying to watch on the security cameras, like what's going on with the jeans, Barb like totally insults him. So he says, oh no, you know what? Go ahead, girl. See ya. Have a good day. And then of course the jeans kill Barb. So in a way he sacrificed her.
Yeah. And he's just smiling about it.
Right. Okay. So now kicking it back to Libby. So we forgot about Libby for a while because she does get locked away and it's easy to forget about her for a while, but she ends up breaking out of wherever Craig hides her. And then she links up with another store employee, Shruti, who she met at the beginning of her shift. Shruti is this really over it, like totally just like not buying into any of the company's bullshit employee. She's clearly been there for long enough that like she's not afraid of any of the managers. She speaks her mind. She's not afraid to like roll her eyes at the store leader. And I think it's just, she's amazing. She's, if you've ever worked retail, she's the energy that we all get to at some point. Because she's so over being there, she just has her headphones in the whole time, listening to music and doing her own thing while she works. So she's been oblivious to what's been going on. And at one point, the pants actually go to attack her, but they overhear that she is listening to and singing along with a Bollywood song. And when the pants recognize the song, they start dancing like a full-on Bollywood-like routine. And I can't wait to talk about how they did that effect, because that's really cool. But Shruti then goes off to her break, still oblivious to the fact that the rest of the store has been murdered and that there was a pair of pants recently dancing behind her. So Libby comes to the shop floor. She finds the massacred bodies. She also finds the camera that Peyton Jewell's team was using. And by watching the footage, she finds out what happened on the floor with the pants like massacring everybody. And then she also sees the pants ignoring Shruti and dancing along to Shruti's music. So she links up with Shruti, shows her all the footage, kind of gets her on board with what's going on, catches her up, because Shruti, of course, has no idea. They then go and hide in the office with Craig, even though Libby says, oh, we can't trust Craig. Shruti says, this is the only place in the building with a lock. It's our only option. So they go into the office with Craig, and they're watching on the security cameras, the pants kind of move around. And at this point, the pants have taken a mannequin, at least a mannequin's upper half. And so like the pants are wearing a mannequin now. So it looks like a mannequin's walking around. And when the pants put the mannequin half on, they use someone's blood to make a bindi, the red dot on their forehead. And so Shruti notices that and says, oh, that's a bindi. And then they kind of put two and two together, like these pants have put a bindi on their head and they were dancing along to Bollywood music. Clearly they must be Indian or Desi. Over the loudspeaker, Shruti communicates in Hindi and the mannequin responds by picking up, at first I thought it was another mannequin hand, and then I realized it was just like a dead body's like severed hand.
I think it was Barb.
Oh shit, that makes sense because of where they're located in the hallway. Sure, sure, sure. Okay, well, that makes even better. So
it was like a ring or something, I remember. I'm pretty sure it was
Barb's hand. So you would notice that stuff. I don't care about jewelry and shit. So the mannequin picks up Barb's hand and then dips the finger in blood and writes on the wall in Hindi and communicates the whole story. So here's the whole deal of the pants, okay? In the beginning of the film, when we were looking at that cotton field, we were following what appeared to be a younger girl picking cotton and then walking, you know, over to wherever with it. And then that's kind of where the scene cuts. So it goes back and it turns out that this is the same girl that we're following. Her name is Kirat. Kirat is 13 at the time, so she is in fact as young as she looks, and she's bringing cotton over to the thresher, which is kind of like the machine that tears all the cotton up. It looks like a bunch of like fucking teeth and like just sawing at each other. So she's bringing the cotton over, she's dumping it in, and then a piece of her sari gets caught in the thresher, which pulls her into it, and so obviously she dies. She gets torn apart by this thresher, and in doing so, I guess like her blood mixes with this cotton, and therefore she kind of like infects or like possesses these genes, and that's how she's able to like live on through these genes. Kirat tells them all what's going on and how the CCC has been lying about their ethical sourcing, that they've been using child labor, and they don't track any of their any of their sources and their workers and anything like that. They have no idea where they're getting this material from.
Yeah, they have no idea who is working for them.
Exactly. And that's like totally what this company's whole like standpoint and mission is all about, like ethical, fair trade, you know, organic stuff. So it's just all a sham.
And then the big thing was the GMOs, right?
Yes. Yeah. He says that they were using GMOs to create this cotton, to create these pants. And that's what you get, I guess, when you start fucking around with GMOs, you get all crazy genes. So the girls, obviously they're furious with it. So they talk to Kirat and say like, hey, we want to tell your story. Will you stop doing this if we get your word out? So they go to record Kirat, or I guess in this case the genes, with the mannequin moving around and telling a story. But before they can actually begin it, Craig disrupts with a fire extinguisher. He breaks up the whole thing because he is still concerned about this goddamn promotion. His entire store is dead, everyone is dead, but he still cares about this promotion as if that's gonna happen. The girls, they go to look for Kirat, and they find now a horde of genes just feasting on like a pile of corpses that Kirat has brought to them. So the genes, they feed and they get stronger, and you know, which makes sense. So Kirat has brought like all of these genes, a bunch of dead bodies. They're all feasting on that and like coming to life. And when the girls discover this, of course, they like turn around and hightail it out of there. But Craig locks them in with the genes. But then they eventually are able to lure him into the hoarded genes area because he wants to get the video camera from them with the footage of Kirat. So he follows them in. Shruti has the camera. He chases after her. And finally, when he catches up to her, she like just kind of offers it to him and he takes it. And obviously you can tell as the viewer, something's up with her. She just like stops and gives it to him. But then he fucking stabs her.
I'm so pissed.
With a fucking, like the metal brace you use to put up shelving, like in a storeroom.
Wait, is that what it was? Okay, I didn't notice that detail. I thought it was like a knife. Like he had a knife.
It was like, if you've ever seen those closets where it's like just a metal bracket against the wall and then you hook in the arms, it's like the arm. He like stabbed her with the arm. Yeah, fucking wild. Yeah, so Craig full-on murders Shruti and takes the camcorder, but then he realizes that the memory card is missing, and that's obviously why she's offering it up, because she's given the memory card to Libby, and they've split up, and he killed her for nothing. Craig then catches up to Libby and starts to strangle her, but then the genes surround him. He drops Libby. She's slightly knocked out. She's not dead. She's like, yeah, whatever. He drops her and the genes surround him and kill him. They eat the shit out of him. All that's left is a skeleton and the eyeballs, with like the meat still left on the skeleton, like a little bit, like it's kind of like when you eat like a chicken leg and there's little bits left. That's what he looks like with eyeballs. A skeleton with eyeballs is really unsettling. So they pick him apart, and now that they're full and ready to go, it's also almost time for the store to open. So the whole horde of genes heads out to the floor to take their positions because they're gonna, you know, kill all the people coming to buy them. So Libby goes out to the floor. She pleads with Kirat to stop the horde from killing everybody, but Kirat's like, nah, fuck that, we're doing this. So Kirat tells her little jeans to like get in place. They do. Libby tries to, the doors are starting to open now. Libby tries to like keep them locked, but obviously she's won against like a, it looks like fucking Black Friday, like the crowd trying to get in there. They like push through the doors, knock her down, cracking open her head. I think someone trampled on her. I don't know. I read online she gets trampled, but I was looking and I didn't see no trampling. But anyway, she dies. The crowd kills her. And as she's dying, you hear in the background, the jeans are just like slaughtering all these people as we expect them to do. And the very last bit is as Libby's taking like her final breaths, she pulls out the memory card and she dies with it in her hand. So hopefully that means someone will find it and figure out what the hell is going on. But that is the end of our film. That is Slacks. So we kind of talked about some of the things I wanted to talk about throughout the summary. So that's kind of cool. But I do want to go to the thing that you and I, it seems immediately connected with, was all these corporate catchphrases that you see.
Oh my God.
So once again, Haley and I have worked in a lot of different corporate places in retail.
Should we say the names? We should not say the names.
We probably shouldn't say the names. I don't fucking care, but like, so we've worked retail. Haley and I worked retail together in a like a body shop type place that's not the body shop. And then I have worked retail in electronics and technology, and Haley has worked retail in clothing. So we all have our horror stories. But at the end of the day, regardless of what you're shoving down people's throats, the retail environment is covered in these corporate catchphrases. So you see them all over the place in this film. The first one I noticed right away, it's almost like this, I think the second or third shot of the film is, it says, employee theft hurts us all. Which, mm-hmm. if you ever work in retail, they all have their cute ways of saying, don't steal our shit, because they know you're stealing shit. But their way of saying it is, employee theft hurts us all. And if you think about it, it was employee theft that started all of this. Now, true, if they just put the jeans out, they would have killed the people eventually. But because Gemma stole these jeans and put them on, they were able to kill her, get strong, kill more people, then get strong enough to kill enough people to feed the other jeans and get them going. Because I think otherwise, the jeans would have just been like weak and more or less normal till someone put them on. You know what I mean?
Right.
But with this route, by the time the store opened, all those jeans were like, they're erect. Like, and that's the thing, like you notice, like at first the jeans are like crawling along the floor like slugs. And then as they get stronger, they start to kind of stand up like hunched a little bit. But then by the end, they're like fully erect. Ow. And then like thick, like it almost looks like there's legs in them in a way.
Right. Well, and because it literally, I mean, especially towards the whole premise of like that whole like overnight is setting up for the display. And being someone who also like has done visual sets and knows like how much of a big deal that is, especially if you're launching a new product, you do stay late overnight and you try to keep it like on wraps and secret, whatever. Like, it was amazing because it, again, kind of like how it seemed to me anyways, that the pants were cleaning up after themselves, like still kind of participating in this like retail role. That's a little bit how I felt at the end when they put themselves on display. I mean, I think also a way to like trick the people into like killing them because they're just, they're on display, but in a weird like, I think maybe it was the formation of it all that was very intentional in my mind, that I was like, these jeans know what they're also working the retail system.
Oh yes, absolutely. It's like, if you were a customer coming in totally unaware of the fact that these jeans are possessed, you would walk in and see these two squads of jeans standing up on their own. Like, what is this magic? Oh my God, these jeans are fucking incredible. Get them on me right now. And you know,
yeah.
And that would be a really cool display, actually.
It would be really cool.
The other of these catchphrases, because they have a lot. They have catchphrases for the staff. And they also have catchphrases they share with, like, the customers. So, like...
Belong. Be leave. B2B. The B2B bullshit got me so hard. I was like, yes. What does B2B mean? We break that down. You be... to be. Like, what does that mean?
So the thing that Haley is referencing in the movie, one of the it's like a phrase that they use with the customers, because now you see it on their posters, but they also seem to use it as kind of like a mantra for the staff. It's like this B2B.
It's a staff buy-in.
Yeah, they have these four Bs. Belong, believe, be love.
Yes, be love, yeah.
And become. The be love says... Because obviously, I mean, this is so stupid, but like they're all single words and then be love.
Yeah.
I loved that. So
love. Because on the display, too, like you know, it's like supposed to be one word, but they're also separated. And you're just like, why? Also, thinking in like a marketing term, I'm just like, that's stupid. Yeah. It just looks dumb.
Yes, exactly. It's very weird. But that's the kind of dumb shit that you see in retail, you know?
That's so true.
And then there's the one that they say it at whenever someone checks out, they say it. They have it on like their fitting rooms. They even say it to the girl, like when they hire her, they say, making a better tomorrow today, which like, I'll give it to them. That is a clever catchphrase in a way, but it also is so gross. It's like such
no,
a,
but
like,
you also know where that's from.
What,
it's
is that from
literally
something?
From Monsters, Inc.
Shut the fuck up.
That's what,
really?
It's like very similar. It's not the exact like making better okay. tomorrow, but it's like, it's that along the lines of we scare because we care, but it was something about like the scare is for today, for tomorrow or something. I swear to God, there's
oh,
something
my
about
God.
That that's very closely related from Monsters,
no.
Inc.
That makes sense though, because I feel like this is a saying you hear in some iteration from like so many different companies. And it's mm-hmm. like, yes, it's so positive. And it's like, but okay, think about this. You're saying, thank you for making a better tomorrow today after you just bought an outfit. Literally, she buys an outfit that is a 3/4 long sleeve shirt,
baseball tee. Yeah.
And I guess like a pair of jeans, $175.
Yeah. No, but my favorite part of all of that is they told her, because I mean, yes, a lot of retailers do the whole thing where like, you know, it was her first day on the floor. So she was out there. She kept getting bounced around to like manager, you know, which I have also done to like new hires as a manager for sure. Sometimes you don't want to deal with it. And like, sometimes you can't, whatever. But so she's getting bounced around to all these different people. And then finally, when she's with Lord, he's like, you're not wearing like our clothes. And she's like, no, I am. Like, I bought this, you know, like 3 months ago or last month or something.
1 month ago.
And then he was like, that's three seasons old.
Three seasons ago.
And you have what to be current, fuck? Which I've also worked in places where, you know, you didn't necessarily have to wear the brand, but if you wore color, it had to be the brand and it had to be the current color, which again is a scheme to make you spend money.
I'm so glad I never worked clothing retail for that reason.
So then when she goes to actually buy the clothes, right? She rings it up, tells the toll. She's like, oh, well, I work here. I get my discount, right? He goes, well, technically your shift doesn't start till 12. So you're not employed until tomorrow. And then she paid full price.
I would have been like, no, I'm taking my discount now, or I'm going to work till 12 in these clothes from a month ago. Especially because she's not even like working on the floor like with customers. It's an overnight. No one's right. there. It's locked down.
Right.
She could
right.
be naked for anyone knows, you know?
The thing that I also think is important, especially like in the beginning of it, I think it's a lot about like employee buy-in, saying these big buzzwords, creating that like warm environment, that culture, you know, whatever. Like you want people to be sucked into your brand, right? Because the more that you're committed to your brand, the more ideally you will get others committed to your brand. And I thought it was so funny recognizing all of those buzzwords, but also seeing someone, because this I feel like happens a lot, you get someone like young and fresh faced into a company that they love, especially a company that talks about its ethics, which we have both worked for a company like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a culture, and you get so excited and think like, oh my gosh, like I'm making a difference and this company is making a difference. And then you learn about what happens and it's just crazy. And I think even before she even found out about like what was wrong with like the creation of the pants, it was the fact that she told Craig, hey, yo, girl's murdered. What do we do? Let's call the police. He goes, oh, no, she did it to herself. Don't tell anyone. And then you see like flashbacks of like him saying, well, are you scared? Do you think there's a murder on the loose? Like, don't be scared. Then you're going to cause problems and you're going to like create fear in the team and da-da-da, you know, whatever. And I'm just like, yeah, people, I don't know. It was very... For that to be, I think, is one of the main things too, especially when you have a company that claims to be ethical, you immediately
I'm not sure
see
I
it.
Understand.
Ooh, Siri, ooh. Goodbye. Sorry.
Hey, girl.
But you immediately see that change and sort of not exist with your managers, which is where it should start, which I think is very funny. But
well, no, I'm glad we kind of got there, because the next point I wanted to get to, and it's kind of segues to it, towards the end of the film, when the girls, when Libby and Shruti become aware of what the reality is with this company, when Craig admits to them, like, we've been using GMOs, we don't track our workers, we don't know shit about where we get this shit from, she says to him, I came here to do good. And he said, his response to her is, and to get half price clothes. And
also real.
I guess So that's the thing. When I first saw this movie, I don't remember. That didn't strike me as much. So I must have just thought it like a throwaway joke. Like, because he kind of says it in like a snotty way, like, oh, and you get free clothes or half price clothes. But that was such a reality. And as someone who, as you just said, has gone into a company thinking like, I'm going to work here because this company does all this good. And just by me being here and selling these people this shit, I'm contributing to that good. And when you find out like, oh, it's not really as good as it sounds or as good as they want to make it seem, by then you're like, well, I've been getting this like stuff for so cheap now. At the place that you and I worked, I was aware of the company. I bought stuff from them a couple of times, but because they were expensive and because, I don't know, it was more like a treat. Like if I was if I was in a mall and saw a store, I'd be like, oh, let me stop in there. Let me get myself a little thing. But then, you know, working there and getting things, shit, we got things for free and not even having to steal it, honestly. Like we got things legit for free. And you just get so used to that. And then it gets to the point where like, honestly, when I was getting ready to quit, I was kind of so bought into like the products that I was like, well, what am I going to do? Like,
what are you going to use?
That? You know? Right. Yeah. And I had the same kind of experience with my leaving my last job that I just left. So it's all fucking manipulation, man.
Anytime I have worked a place, but I think it goes both ways. Anytime I have worked a place and stopped working there, rarely do I ever go back and shop there because you don't get the discount. Because if you think about it, and yes, it's a tool to have your employees use or wear or eat and drink whatever that product is, which still makes you money as a company. But think about the markup value. Like, I tend to think of the business side just within the various roles that I've had too. If I'm gonna buy a shirt, okay, that's priced at $100, all right, and I get 50% off, but paying $50 is still a huge markup for that item. So that's the thing I think about too. It's like, I already know this is overvalued at my half off or even 75% off discount, and you're still making money on that? That like, I don't know. Why would I give you more money when it's worth a dollar, you know? Which then also goes in like with something like this too. I think if you're younger, which I think Libby was, you don't think about, you know, how stuff is made and the cost of making it versus the markup. But when Craig also made the comment of and to buy half price clothes, to me it was, yes, you're here for the discount, but also a, well, what do you think? How do you think we can sell this so cheaply?
Right. And then Shruti even says that because they talk about like when they find out they're using GMOs, Libby is like appalled, so shocked. And she's like, how could you do that? And Shruti says, how do you think they can make a pair of jeans for $5 and sell them for $150?
Exactly.
It's insane. And I guess like to your point about Libby coming into this kind of young, but also like when you only know a company as a consumer, you only see all those good things they want you to see.
100%.
You know, like that's why I will never work at McDonald's or Burger King because I don't want to know what's going on backstage.
You don't want to know what's in it.
I just want to keep enjoying it and then paying for it later. The last thing I did want to touch on real quick with you about this, because I know we both can relate. One of the things that I so loved in this film is how the staff members speak to each other. Mm-hmm. Everyone except for Libby, who's new, all the people that have been there, they all speak to each other in like this code where they're all super cheery and saying super pleasant words, but they're just like biting each other. It's this like masked animosity that is so like, oh, thank you so much, Haley. It's so great to have you today. I'm so glad you're here today. Okay, great. Like it's just, and we've all been there because even when you're so pissed off, if you have just like the basic shred of work ethic and decorum, you know not to like really show that ass on the floor in front of customers, but you have a way of making it known. And it's just so funny that even like during this overnight when no customers are there, they're all still talking to each other that way. Like the interactions between Craig and Barb, his regional manager, who's just like on his ass, the way that she doesn't cover shit. And I think that's so telling of a regional manager, because whenever the regional manager comes to the store, they walk around, they don't give a shit about shit. They don't care who you are. They're the regional manager. They're here to check things out, tell you what to do, and be on their way and collect their six figures. So everyone that works in the store, the store manager, all of the like floor leader managers, they're all doing this kind of like covert like rudeness to each other. But Barb is just like flat out, you're trash. You're never going to be nothing more than trash. Get out of my fucking face. It's trash.
Because also when you get so high up on the ladder, nothing will happen to you. Like very rarely will anything ever happen to you, which is where the problems stem from.
Girl, that's a whole other podcast. When he says to her, because they're all like geared up for this Peyton Jules character, and when he says, oh, so like, should I take Peyton to this section, that section? She says, that task has been set to me, or like whatever the fuck. Like, they're like, she just takes any chance she can to bite him down. That's why I don't really feel bad for her when he, you know, leads her to her death. Although Craig is a fucking piece of shit, so I'm glad he gets like picked to the bone, but they both deserve to die, so like, work.
Right.
Wicked. Okay.
Wait, we gotta talk about the dancing pants.
Oh my God, we didn't talk about the dancing pants. Well, that was going to bring me to my final thoughts, and this is a perfect place for the final thoughts because this is included in the credits. So in the credits, you see how they make the pants dance. So,
brilliant.
Yeah, whenever they play this Bollywood music, the pants stops whatever it's doing and just starts like doing a full like Bollywood routine from like the waist down. And it's just like so fun and so cute. I assumed watching it, I was like, oh, these like CGI pants that they're just like, you know, animated on a computer.
That's what I thought.
In the credits, they show you a little bit behind the scenes. They have a dancer in a full green screen bodysuit that is puppeteering the pants. She has, I guess, like a stick attached to each foot that's attached to like the ankle of the pants. And then she's holding two sticks that are attached to the waist. You can kind of see the back of the pants is like flat and like taut, mm-hmm. You know? So it makes sense when you're seeing
how it's done. I think it was hooked to the knees also.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, for all the bendability. So yeah, basically she's just dancing and whatever she's doing is being mirrored by the pants because she's just like holding the pants in front of her. And it's really neat and really cool.
It was really cool. I did look up Parmada India, which is the song that the pants dance to. And there's a couple different references of that song also in the film. But it's like a super famous song.
It's a good song.
And it is good. And I wanna go back and like watch the pants and then also look up the video to the song because the Bollywood dances are so specific.
Yeah, they're like line dances. They're like the specific choreo for each song. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it would be incredible if the pants did the actual dance moves to the song. Yeah. I have to watch it.
Unless it's something crazy, I would imagine they did something at least close to it.
Because you could do, I mean, you could, if you're seeing just like the movement of the legs and the feet and the knees, like I think it was like kind of generic with what the movement was, especially the Bollywood movies that I have now seen. But again, that also like the very much like bending of the knees and the feet in the front and back, you know, like it was very specific too as being generic. I don't know. I want to watch.
No, yeah. I'm curious about that. You should let me know what happens because that would be cool if they try to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I imagine they would. All right, so as we wrap up here, Haley, do you have anything you'd like to plug? Do you want to plug any yourself?
You know what? No, I'm not doing anything, but saying plug over and over again does make me think of Gemma. And I'm just going to leave it at that.
Why?
From Slacks. You'll get it. Plug. I don't want to give too much away.
I don't get it. I watched the movie like 2 hours
ago.
Just keep saying
plug and think of Gemma and you'll get it.
Plug it in. Well, okay. All right, so
no.
I'll think it over.
Listeners, you'll get it. You'll understand. Oh,
okay. All right, so you can find us at Not Another QHP on Instagram. If you have any thoughts, questions, recommendations for people to interview, recommendations for movies to cover, anything at all you want to share with me, you can email me at notanotherqhp@gmail.com. And until next time, we will get creepy.
Cute.
Let's try on some pants. Cute. All right, bye, bitches.
Bye.
Not Another Queer Horror Podcast is recorded, edited, and produced by me, Christian Mingle. All of the music used in this episode is produced by Mr. Fulton.